Hello, everybody. My name is Izzy Grossoff, and this is the Some Gender Going On podcast. This is episode 5, Against a Girl in a Boy's Body. So just to be clear, I'm out traveling right now, so the recording quality won't be as good as in other episodes. My apologies. I couldn't figure any other options. Alright, so there's a shorthand for describing trans people that I hear a lot. A trans girl will be described as, she's a girl in a boy's body, or even, a girl trapped in a boy's body. You know, a trans boy, you know, a boy trapped in a girl's body. People who use this sort of terminology don't talk about MVs very much. It's something that's used with and among people who are fairly unfamiliar with the concept of transness. And I don't like it. I specifically don't like it for the mindset it imparts to trans people who are unfamiliar with the concept of transness, or who are exploring, or who aren't yet secure in their transness, which, let me be clear, is a lot of trans people. It's basically all of us at some point in our lives. The point here is, a shorthand like this, it's not just a shorthand that introduces cis people to the concept of transness. Because if someone's never heard of transness, neither you nor them know whether they're cis or trans or something else. So it's a concept that introduces a wide variety of people to the concept of transness, and I think it's a bad starting point. At least, I definitely think it was a bad starting point for me. I think it's likely to be for a lot of people. If it's a concept that you know works for you, that's totally valid. This is about my experience and my thoughts, and about people who might have experiences like mine. So, on a girl in a boy's body, for me. What I have to say here is, the body I have, this is my body. It's always been mine, and it's always going to be mine. Now, be clear, there's a lot of things about oneself one can change. One can change one's name, one's friends, one's career, one's family, one's entire relationship to society. Or one can change some aspects of one's body, some features, some patterns. Maybe one gains some weight, or loses some, or muscles, or fat, or hair, or alters one's voice, or gets a tattoo, or changes one's hormonal system, or gets various surgeries. Beyond the physical aspects of one's body, how I feel about my body can change. As I change some aspects, as I change my relationship to my body's, as I escape society's narratives about my bodies and build my own, all of these things change. But even as aspects change, even as feelings change, my body remains. My body's been with me the whole way, and it's here to stay. The core of it, even as features change. Now, to be clear, I've made modifications, upgrades, I might add, as I've gained a better understanding of what I'm looking for, as I've been able to take my body in the directions I want, as I've escaped narratives of what my body should be. But through it all, I've kept my body, learned its quirks, loved them, or maybe accommodated them, or maybe endured them, or maybe changed them. But through and through, my body. So no, I'm not a girl born in a boy's body. I'm not an NB born in a boy's body, and I never was. I'm an NB born in an NB's body. My body. I own this body. It's mine. No one else gets to own it. No one else gets to define it. Society wasn't ready for it yet. They didn't know, or they couldn't see, or they couldn't ask, or they didn't see, or they didn't ask. Society tried to own my body, tried to define it, tried to define it as a boy's body. But I don't care what society thought then, and I don't care what society thinks now. I know who I am, and what body I have, and what body I've always had. I'm me, and I was born in my body. The body I was born in was, and is, and will always be, mine. So whoever I am, this body is mine. So no, I was not in a boy's body, as in a boy's social role, a boy's narrative, a boy-shaped box crafted by every person around me and all of society's stories and expectations. And then, when I crashed my way out of that box, with help, I took my body with me. And I left behind the rubble of those roles, and those narratives, and expectations, and confinement and boxes. My body does not confine me. It is a canvas on which I work, on which I find joy. The box that was once used to attempt to confine me, that is external to me. It can be defeated. It does not define me. It can be left behind. There's a song which makes this point quite well. The song is called Dead Name by Flash, and specifically the AMAB remix featuring Kara McKenzie. It has lines that go like this. And just in case somebody wants to see the boy I used to be, I killed him with my own two hands, tore him out of me, dropped the pretense and kept the body he left behind. I'll take this form and make it mine. I'll have a link in the show notes. Just a warning, if you do want to go and watch it, it's a wonderful song. I recommend it strongly. The visuals are pretty gory, in implication, not in realization. So if you don't like that sort of thing, don't watch it. Or just listen to it. But what's the point of this song? The point is, this body, my body, is not the boy I used to be. The boy I used to be and my body are two different things. I can kill that boy, rip him out of me. He doesn't define me. He will not be with me forever. He is not with me anymore. And when I've ripped him out, I can craft my body. I can make it mine. Because that boy is a story, a fantasy, an image pasted on top of me, pasted on top of my body. They're not the same thing. And the narrative, a girl in a boy's body, it gives society the power to define what is or is not a boy's body. And you can never escape a boy's body. You can never escape the way your body is. So if society gets to define what your body is, then you can never escape the confinement of society. So no, I don't like that phrase at all. Okay, but why does this matter? Why am I recording a podcast about it at 5:30 in the morning in a foreign country? Well, the real answer is I have a complicated relationship with sleep. But today's answer is for why it matters. Well, for that we need to start with some context. So there's a brainworm I grew up with. A brainworm being a narrative that infects one's mind and sticks with one even as it harms oneself. Particularly a phrase used in a trans context, but I think it can apply much more broadly. So there's a brainworm I grew up with that infected me that was heavily circulating when I was a kid. And it's something that specifically targets trans feminine people like me. Note that I hadn't heard of non-binariness when this mindset started infecting me. So it was from a more amalgamated trans-feminine perspective that I was coming at things. The narrative goes that by the very act of exploring femininity, both in expression and in self-understanding, by approaching a girl's body, an approach that is assumed to be from the outside, that by approaching a girl's body we are harming girls or women. In some way, we, the trans feminine people, embody both perpetrator and victim in this narrative. Both the boy or the man who is doing the violence and the girl or the woman to whom violence is being done. That the ephemeral girl, the world we don't get to occupy, is being harmed by us trying to be like that. That this image of a girl we're not is more important than the person we actually are. That we're making a mockery of the abstract concept of womanhood or of girlhood, and that this abstract concept of girlhood is the victim that we sully with our presence. That if we wear feminine clothes or feminine makeup or other products marketed to women that are aimed at feminine expression, that by doing so we are doing violence to those products, to those clothes, to that makeup, to the expression, to the concept itself. Sure, mass market transphobia is framed around, oh, you're hurting real people that exist. Because trying to explicitly push a message that you're harming an abstract concept, that you're harming these inanimate, feminine-associated products, it's ludicrous. Of course that's not true. But that's the message. The message is, you don't own this. You are doing violence by trying to. What did that look like for me? Well, I explored my gender in complete privacy and secrecy. I scrupulously avoided any other person who I could potentially be harming by my exploration, especially in the early days when I was a teenager. And yet still, I was consumed by this feeling that I was harming someone or something by my act of exploration. Something good and pure and outside of me that I wished to be part of, I was harming by approaching it. That by attempting to be part of this, or being in proximity to it, I was making something worse by my presence. And with that feeling, I explored anyways, while feeling that I was hurting an abstract someone by doing so. Feeling that I was wrong or degenerate or violent by my act of exploring. I'd do it on autopilot, unable to justify why I was doing what I was doing. So, I didn't explore much, I didn't explore with much confidence, and I didn't go looking for positive role models. Because how could I go looking for a positive role model of a trans woman when I was doing violence by just approaching the concept of womanhood? How could I find out about non-binary people when all I've got is this man's body, this boy's body? That was the mindset I was stuck in. And I didn't tell anyone, absolutely anyone, what I was doing. Because if somebody knew what I was doing, not only would they look down on me, but then there'd be an even more direct route by which my actions could harm not just an abstract someone, but a specific someone. Because if they were grossed out by me, then I've harmed somebody. This, you can see why it's called a brain worm, why the parasitic, harmful imagery is important here, because these mindsets really are very parasitic and very harmful. And I don't think that this was an uncommon feeling for trans feminine people, especially people who were exploring around the time I was, or presumably earlier. This was perhaps in the late 2000s or early 2010s in my case. I've looked into where this feeling was coming from, where this brain worm began circulating from, and there are a lot of different sources. For instance, media representations of the time period. If you want to see more about that, check out Lily Simpson on YouTube. Strongly recommend. But also certainly just the general a lot of other sort of osmosis and atmospheres of society, not just direct media consumption. Now, today I want to talk about how this brain worm specifically interacts with the narrative, a girl in a boy's body. See, It promotes the idea that there are two inherently different things, a boy's body and a girl's body, and that when one starts out in the world, one doesn't have a girl's body or an NB's body, one has a boy's body. Well, I should say I had a boy's body, is what this narrative would tell me. And that's what this brainworm I was talking about feeds into, saying, you've got a boy's body. When you put on women's clothes on a boy's body, you're harming those clothes, you're violating the natural order of things. If I bring my unbelonging boy's body into girls' spaces or doing girls' things, that I'm harming those spaces or those things, that I don't belong. Because, you know, I might be an NB, but I'm not all NB. I'm an NB, but I'm an NB with a body like this. And it feeds into a mindset that one doesn't deserve girlness or anything but boyhood until one's first obtained a different body. And especially for children, that's wildly difficult and often unattainable. Especially when one's stuck thinking that one can't tell anybody because one will harm others by the confession of that desire and the confession of one's explorations. So this idea of only somebody with a girl's body deserves girlness, and that you don't have a girl's body, you have a boy's body, and that the only way to start being valid would be to change one's body. That was the mindset that was fucking me up. It's a mindset that I don't deserve girlness until I first obtained a girl's body. That girlness is predicated on what body one has, on where one's body is at a given moment. And sure, it's, oh, you're a girl in a boy's body, but that's not it, is it? You're a girl with the only body you'll ever have. You're a person with a boy's body, which is the only body you'll ever have. And if you're like me, and you're exploring, if you haven't, you know, jumped the gap completely and gone all the way to, I know I'm a girl, well, then I'm a question mark in a boy's body. And the boy's body is so rigid and so permanent, and one will never live in a different body than one currently lives in. So how can a question mark in a boy's body be anything other than a boy in a boy's body? That's the problem I was having. And the answer is no. There is no a boy's body. There's a body that society labeled boy, but I'll rip that label off and print my own label. There's a body that when people who don't know what's up look at it, they think boy, but they can stop looking, or I can tell them the right answer, or they can learn better. Whatever. It's changeable, the point is. It's not rigid, it's not set in stone. So if you want to make the saying, a girl in a body that some people think is a boy's body some of the time, well, fine. You can go ahead and call it that. I don't mind. Not as catchy, but not as harmful either. Now, this whole idea of one's gender being predicated on one's body, it ties into a lot of media obsession around that time period that I was exploring, so late 2000s, obsession with the details of a trans person's body. So talking about people as pre-op or post-op rather than none of your fucking business op. Because the mindset was, oh, we're not really a girl unless our bodies are just like those of a cis person. As if we don't deserve happiness unless and until we've reached that holy grail. And just like a holy grail, it doesn't exist. It's just something people tell myths about. There is no just like a cis person's body that will satisfy somebody who just wants to reach for a more demanding standard. And it's a mindset that, you know, as if we don't deserve to express our gender, express our sense of self and what gives us joy, unless we've obtained a different body. And no, that's just obviously and completely wrong. We deserve to be ourself and know ourself and enjoy ourselves with exactly the body we have, or with whatever changes we want to make, or to take our body in any direction we want. And whether we've taken those changes, we're going to, or we're not going to, or we haven't decided, or we haven't even heard of them, it's still our bodies every step of the way. And we get to define what they are and what they mean to us. For me, the only way I could pursue hormone replacement therapy was if it was secondary to my gender. The only way I could change my body was if my gender came first and my body came second. Only once I'd explored, first in secret, and then among friends, and then in public, and then hatched being my non-binary self, only once I'd reached the point of so much confidence in my gender that I knew I'd be the envy I know myself to be, regardless of what bodily aspects I have. Only once I knew that this body would be my body, an envy body, no matter how I shaped it, no matter what I painted on this canvas, only then could I say, I am an envy, and there is no correct hormonal system for an envy. There's no hormonal system that an envy's body is supposed to have, because it's not a boy's body that's supposed to have a T hormonal system, and then you can overwrite that with an E system. No, I'm an envy, and I happen to have a T system at one point in my life, and I happen to have an E system now, and I know what I prefer, and neither of them are the truth written on the fabric of the universe. They're both just where I happen to be, what I've chosen, what's right for me. This is an envy's body, no matter what. Only then, when I finally knew that my body is an extension of me, that I define it, and not the other way around, could I finally start to paint on that canvas. And this connection between this narrative, this brain worm, and my experiences and secretive exploration, and this narrative of a girl in a boy's body, that connection is why I'm focusing on a girl in a boy's body rather than a woman in a man's body. Because when it affected me most was when I was a child. When I was, before ever hearing about the concept of transness, and just starting to hear about it. Because that's what an initial description is. That's who it has the most relevance to. To children, to the uninformed, to those just starting to explore. So, I'm sad for my previous self. I had a rough time of it. Things could have been a lot easier, more supportive, more pleasant. I could have told more people what was going on, and maybe some good would have come of it, and maybe things would have turned out worse. The history is, things happened the way they happened. But I'm not going to blame myself. I'm not going to say, No, you should have done it differently. No, society should have been different. I'll blame society. But me, little old me over here, they were just doing the best they could, you know? They're just trying to make their way through life. You know, trying to be a good person, trying to be true to themselves. And there were a lot of things getting in the way of both of those things. But knowing that I own my body, I have the rights of my body, I have the freedom over it, that's very important. That's something I can take pride in having learned. So if you're going to imagine me when I was younger, you know, it's important that even if I had a beard back then, or I was on the Little League baseball team, or, you know, whatever I was doing at any given point in my childhood, just know, it was always an envy doing those things. It was always an envy's body growing a beard or getting tall or getting angry. And me too. I was getting tall. I was growing a beard. I was getting angry. And I was an envy. And I still am. There's not some separate being who lived back then and a separate being who lives now. There's a separate narrative, a separate mindset of me towards myself and of others towards me. But I embody that entire history. And I grieve for the challenges that I went through. And for a nicer life I could have had in a better world. So, a little bit of what this podcast tries to accomplish and many other things I do is to sort of talk about that grief and what a better world could look like. Imagine myself going back and comforting that young me in a dark moment when they felt so much danger and shame and fear and violence, and comfort them and say, "Hey, it's all right, Izzy. You're doing okay. Try to figure out yourself. That's noble. That's honorable. That's a good thing. You're not hurting anybody. You're doing a good job." There was nobody around to tell me that when I was younger. Nobody who ever could have. So I have to do it for myself now. That's okay. That's better than never hearing it. I know this is a bit of a tangent for the original topic of the podcast, but to be honest, all my favorite podcasts just go more and more tangents over time. there's so much focus on safety, you know, on protect trans kids. That's never what I needed. What I needed was to be told, you're not hurting anybody. No one needs to be protected from you. You're safe for others to be around. It's a harder message. It's not a... We're not used to telling people that they're not dangerous. We're not used to trying to help people who don't quite know who they are yet. It can be done. It's worth doing. It's not as easy of a story. And I think that's what I really don't like. I don't like stories that I feel like are being told primarily because they're easy to tell. And to be clear, there's nothing wrong at all about protecting trans kids where they need protecting. It's a noble calling, to be sure. But I don't like it being the core of the mindset, the core of our perspective on what help kids need from us. Kids need somebody to tell them that being authentic is good, but that exploring who they really are is right and wholesome, and even if their exploration takes them a direction that society doesn't think is okay, society wouldn't be happy with. Well, that means society is wrong, not you, not us. It reminds me a little bit of a scene in Huckleberry Finn where Huck is, he's weighing on one hand everything society has ever told him about what it means to be a good person, about that God wants him to turn in runaway slaves, that enforcing the system of slavery is the highest moral calling. And he weighs his options and looks at everything he's ever been told is good, and chooses his friend instead. It's a very powerful moment. I had moments like that. Not something quite as desperately correct as helping your friend flee enslavement, but still important. Of saying, here's on one hand everything society's ever told me about how to be a good person, an honorable person, a righteous person, and saying, but that image, that cis person that you're telling me I'm supposed to be, that's not me. I can't be that righteous person, that honorable person, that good person that you want me to be. It's weighing up everything I was told is the right way to be, and then saying, no, I have to be myself. And then later, at least in some parts, society comes around. Society comes to agree with me. Just like for Huck, society came around and said, yeah, actually, slavery is bad. And for me, it said, yeah, actually, being your authentic true self is good. but it wasn't telling me that when I was doing it. So, yeah, that's why telling my past self, you know, you're doing okay. You're still a good person. There's something noble about exploring who you are. People will catch up eventually. So, yes. I never had a boy's body. I just had a boy that society told me was a boy's. It told me that because I had a boy's body, it determined what I could be and what I should be. And so I reject society's power to decide what kind of body I truly have. I was always an NB in an NB's body. I was never a girl in a boy's body or an NB in a boy's body. And after many, many years, I can internalize it. This body is mine, that I can do whatever I want with my body, make it whatever I want, and it will always exist as an outgrowth of me. That I own and define my body, not the other way around. So for you, you get to decide who you are, and your body exists as an extension of who you are. So if you're exploring, maybe that looks like I'm a question mark in a question mark's body. Say you're exploring femininity or girlness, for instance. You can explore questions like, so if I'm a girl, and if this is a girl's body, what would I do with this girl's body of mine? Explore what it's like to have a tall girl's body, maybe, or a bearded girl's body, or a muscled girl's body, or any other way your body is, any other way you who you could be, and what body you could have. Because if you don't know who, whether you're a boy or a girl or an NB or something else yet, you also don't know what kind of a body you have yet. You don't know whether you have a girl's body or a boy's body or an NB's body or none of the above. Because it exists because you exist. It is defined because you define it. And if you haven't defined yourself, then it hasn't been defined either. And if you never want to define yourself, that's totally fine too. And the body, you have the full option to never define your body either. There's nothing wrong with that. So, thank you for listening. Thanks for thinking. Good luck. And I hope listening to this has helped in some way.